You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Before we hear our passage for today, what I want to remind you of is that what you are about to hear is one of the most important stories in the New Testament. So important that it's one of the only stories that is told in one way or another in all four of the Gospels. So here is a map of the Sea of Galilee area, and you see here is Capernaum. Do you know the significance of Capernaum? That's where Jesus had his bachelor pad, okay? That's where everybody came to hang out with Jesus. And Chorazin and Bethsaida. Now remember, everything on this side of the river that comes into the Sea of Galilee here is the Gentile territory. This is all Gentile territory. Everything over there is Jewish territory, and that comes into play a little bit later. You can see that area is pretty desolate. This picture is from when the Sea of Galilee was pretty low, but you can see the mountains in the background. There's really no place on the Sea of Galilee that you can be that you can't see all four sides of the lake. I mean, people think it's like this giant thing, but no, it's actually really small. There's a place up near Bethsaida called Tabgha. It's one of these really cool places that has been there for a long time, but the Catholics that have owned this area have really set it up beautifully. They've maintained this Byzantine-style chapel there to remember the story that we are going to hear today. It's called Heptapagon by some, who's called Seven Fountains. This is what the church looks like inside. It's really beautiful. And just like all over the Holy Land where you go, when you go inside there, there is usually a rock. And there's the rock right there at the bottom underneath that altar. And that rock is where Jesus was supposed to have been standing when he multiplied the loaves and fishes. So whenever you go to the Holy Land, you're going to see a lot of rocks. Well, this rock is where this happened, and this rock is where that happened. So, but right in front of this rock is the mosaic of the loaves and fishes, which you've probably seen before. It's a pretty famous mosaic, and that's where this was supposed to have happened. It's important to remember about these loaves and fishes being feeding the people and feeding a hunger of people that were out in the wilderness, and this was very much wilderness back in the day, because back then you didn't have the kind of conveniences that you once had. There's an aerial shot that you can see what we saw on the map. But one of the things that you didn't have, this is Tiberias, and this is the big city on the Sea of Galilee. And one of the things they have there is, of course, McDonald's, which they did not have. That's Nat and Laura standing in front of McDonald's, which unfortunately was closed. But that gives you an idea, a reminder that this is not anything that they had back then. What I want you to remember is that in Mark and Matthew and Luke's versions, Herod had just lopped off John the Baptist's head. Okay? Now, Jesus ostensibly was kind of part of the John the Baptist movement at that point. Remember, he'd gone to be baptized by John the Baptist? He was kind of part of that group. And so when John got his head lopped off, who did it fall to run the movement now? So Jesus was like, oh, dang it. You know, so now he had to go off someplace and be alone to kind of think through, okay, wow, well, I guess my time is now. So that's why he went off into the wilderness to be alone and to get away from all these people who, of course, would not leave him alone and wanted to follow him. In John's version, Jesus is actually in Jerusalem. And this is one of those things that helps you realize, you know, people say, oh, well, the Fountains, they don't read the Bible, you know. They don't believe the Bible. No, the problem is we do read the Bible. And so we see things like in John, which we're going to hear from today, Jesus is actually in Jerusalem, and he's healing people at the Pool of Bethesda. And then the very next moment, and then he went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. Huh? What? I mean, that's like, you know, Beth Dyer was having lunch in Fountain Hills, and then she went to have dessert in Salt Lake City. You know, that, you know, anybody that knows this area would go, oh, what? Well, they look kind of close together on the map, right? So what it tells you is that the author of John probably was not familiar with this area. Had probably never been there and was just going off of stories that they'd heard. Another clue here is, you'll see right here at the very beginning, it says, on to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. Now, why would you do that? Why would you put in the Sea of Galilee, also known as the Sea of Tiberias? Because the people that were hearing this story only knew it as the Sea of Tiberias. They didn't know it as the Sea of Galilee. If you were Jewish, you'd know it as the Sea of Galilee. If you're Greek and somewhere off, somewhere else in the Mediterranean, you'd know it as Sea of Tiberias. And that's where a lot of your dried fish came from. That was the center of a big fish industry. So this is kind of like geographic glitch. And some of these things where you see the, oh, this is also doing business as, you would know that this was written for people who didn't know the area by someone who didn't know the area. This particular version is by far the longest of the four Feeding of the 5,000 stories. There's lots more detail. So it was probably written, you know, a good 20 years beyond any of the other stories. But it expands to add all these details. It gives Jesus foreknowledge, you'll hear in the passage here, of what's about to happen, including Jesus testing Philip. So, I mean, it's like you're asking your toddler child, so what do you think we should do? You know, and Philip says, well, I, you know, they're blah, blah, blah. And Jesus says, well, you know, you're wrong, basically, and continues. And there's other little things in here that always, as a reader, makes me go, wow, what was the motivation for putting that in? Where the other verses say, so all the people sat down on the grass and, you know, waiting for the meal. In this version, it says, it goes out of its way to say, there was a great deal of grass. What? It really emphasizes to make sure that you know there's a lot. So, but I think there's one reason that this version of our story was included in Vacation Bible School this week. And that's because this is the only version that includes the mention of the boy with the loaves and the fishes. Remember that? We often associate that and just think, oh, well, that's in every version of the story. No, that's not in any of the other versions. It's only in this one version where Andrew says, hey, well, there's this kid here. Kid, get over here. Give me that food. Here, Jesus. And then Jesus goes, great, let's use this. So I think that's one of the reasons so that kids could relate to this little boy in the passage as someone who can contribute like they can to the betterment of the kingdom. So let's listen to this version of the loaves and fishes story and listen for some of those kind of things that you might go, oh, that's interesting. Little details that you didn't hear before and little geographic and other things that make your Sherlock Holmes cap spin. So let's hear our version of loaves and fishes for today.
After this, Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd kept following him because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. Jesus went up the mountain and sat down there with his disciples. Now the Passover, the festival of the Jews, was near. When he looked up and saw a large crowd coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread for these people to eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. Philip answered him, 6 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each of them to get a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they among so many people?" Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." Now there was a great deal of grass in the place, so they sat down, about 5,000 in all. Then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, So also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told his disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over so that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up, and from the fragments of the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Let's pray. Loving and gracious Spirit, for these stories that come to us from so long ago, we are truly grateful. And may we hear them today with open hearts and open minds so that none of us might leave this place unchanged. We gather as followers of Jesus. Amen. Well, a lot has changed since Jesus' day, if you haven't noticed. It may not have been as easy to pull off the kind of picnic that Jesus pulled at that day if he had to deal with the challenges that we kind of take in stride every day. I mean, think about how different it would be today if Jesus was to try to pull this off. Here he is trying to, feed the crowd, and someone says, "I can't eat that. I'm a vegan." Someone else says, "Has that fish been tested for mercury?" And for Jordan and me, "Is that bread gluten-free?" Right? For the early Christian church, sharing a meal was the way that they set themselves apart. Now, there were other pagan mystery religions and all of that that celebrated with meals that were sacred meals. But one of the things that set the Jesus movement apart is they let anybody in. They encouraged people to come to the meal and welcome everyone. They practiced all kinds of variations of this. But when they weren't actually sharing a meal, they were telling stories about sharing meals because it's kind of what set them apart. It distinguished them from everybody else. And these stories of the feeding of the 5,000 and in other places the feeding of the 4,000 were so important to the early Jesus movement. It was so important that, as I mentioned, it's in all 4 Gospels, which is very unusual. And more than that, if you count the feeding of the 4,000, 2 meals, that's 6 different versions of this feeding story. In Mark and Matthew, there are 2 meals, 5,000 and 4,000, and each story is told for very specific reasons. And just as an example from Matthew, the feeding of the 5,000, it's all Jews. It's an all-Jewish affair. And they end up with how many basketfuls left over? 12 basketfuls. Why is that important? That's exactly right. You know, Matthew especially, it's like, oh, we're going to emphasize this Jewish connection, right? So we have 12 tribes, so we have 12 basketfuls left over. So it's saying that we've got enough for everybody. Now, the feeding of the 4,000 takes place after Jesus disses the Syrophoenician woman. Remember Jesus, remember what he calls the woman? What does he call her? A dog. Oh my gosh. This is like the worst insult that you can give, even now in the Middle East, to call someone a dog. And yet the woman, speaks up, speaks her mind and says, wow, even the dogs get the crumbs under the table. And Jesus is like, oh my gosh, how embarrassing. So he immediately goes to, remember I told you on the far right side, he goes to the Gentile side of the lake, no Jews, to do a feeding of the 4,000 for the Gentiles. And after this meal is over, how many basketfuls were left? 7. Why is that important? Because in the Greek and Roman numerological, constellation, 7 is a lucky number. It's the perfect number, right? You're aspiring to 7. So it's the perfect number. And somebody might say, well, hey, why did the Gentiles get less? They only got 7 when the Jews got 12. Well, and I think I've talked to you about this before, that the words are actually different. So that in the Greek, the Jews have 12 basketfuls. Okay, can you picture a basket, right? The Greeks, in the Greek, original Greek, the language, the word is hampers full. So you can picture a hamper. So that's very different. So there's it's a perfect amount for Greeks, a perfect amount for Jews. And then there's the little boy. He wasn't added to the story until much later. He's only in John, and his presence there is probably in part a slam of the religious leaders. Remember, we've had a clean break between Jews and Christians when John was written. And so imagine here you've got this little boy symbolic of the upstart Jesus movement, right? And even though they may be small and they may not have much, it's enough, right? And so it's a great symbolism, it's a great metaphor for the later church to have this little boy there offering what little he has. Now, the focus of our themes for VBX took on various stories from the Bible to encourage the kids to see themselves as part of making the world a better place. So you can see the themes right up here. Imagine with God, that used the story of Esther. So they got to learn that story. Build with God used the story of the rebuilding of the temple and the wall in Ezra. Grow with God used the parable of the mustard seed. And walk with God used the story of the road to Emmaus from Luke. Now, Thursday's session was work with God and used today's picnic story from John. And as we've mentioned, this is the only version that includes the help of the little boy. And it's perfect to help the kids connect, I think, with the idea that even they have resources to help in the world. So you'll remember from the story, Jesus took the lead. He took what the little boy had. He said the standard blessing, Baruch atah Adonai, blessed art thou, Lord our God, creator of the universe, who brings forth bread from the earth. That'll become important in a minute. And with that invitation, started to share what little they had. Before they knew what was happening, there was more than enough for everyone, plus the leftovers. The bottom line is that these stories have been told and retold because they are stories of abundance in community. And that's the miracle. But not miraculous in a kind of hocus-pocus way, the way most people think of it as miraculous. Let me tell you what. There are four different ways to look at this story. Some of you are familiar with these, but it's good to review. Number one, if you're a literalist, if everything in the Bible is, boom, exactly the way it's supposed to be and was inspired to be written down exactly that way by God, then it is a supernatural miracle where Jesus multiplied a tiny little bit of food to prove who he was to anyone who still had doubts. Now remember, this is after he'd spent the whole afternoon healing people. Duh. I mean, if you didn't know who he was by that time, you're hopeless, right? Number two way of looking at it. I don't know if you remember Albert Schweitzer, the doctor who went to Africa to be a missionary. He gave us what in the biz is called a sacramental interpretation. He kind of sacra means to make holy, something that's plain and ordinary. So he made this kind of sacramental interpretation popular where he said, yeah, it was a supernatural miracle where Jesus multiplies the loaves and fishes to feed hungry people, but it was a spiritual hunger. It wasn't a literal hunger. It was a spiritual understanding that kind of sets the stage for the Eucharist. Everybody gets just a morsel, right? You just get a little bit. Unfortunately, that doesn't fit with the details presented in this story. Poor Albert. He needed to have read more closely. Because doesn't it say that everybody ate till they had their fill, right? That implies lots and lots, and you still had plenty left over. And one of the funniest ones, it's kind of funny sad. There was a guy in the 60s named Hugh Schoenfield. He was a convert to Christianity, and he was very enthusiastic. Sadly, though, he was a bona fide literalist. He wanted to make sure that everything was taken literally according to the story. So he wrote a book called The Passover Plot, I don't know if any of you have heard of that before, but it's this really amazing thing where he tried to cast Jesus in the role of this kind of almost charlatan. I mean, when you really get down to it. And remember, he went up onto a mountain, right, to do this? Well, what you don't know, according to Hugh, is that Jesus knew it was going to happen. So he went up ahead of time on the mountain with baskets full of bread and fish and hid them in a cave. And then he went up there and he stood right in front of that cave. And he broke the bread and everything. And then he started to reach back and he started to go, "Hey, everybody, here we go," you know. And he started to pass it out because he had set it all up ahead of time because he knew how stupid those little country bumpkins were out in Galilee. And he knew he could pull the wool over their eyes. But remember, there's a passage in here that's from the Jewish blessing in Hebrew where it says, "Blessed art thou, Lord God, who brings forth bread from the earth," right? So he was taking that literally. He was bringing forth bread from the earth, right? So that just gives you another example of how dangerous it is when we read these things literally. So my favorite is, and I think it's the real miracle, but it's a perfectly natural miracle that any of us can take part in. And that was, there were hungry people. But in those days, folks always carried something with them to eat. You never left town, let alone go out in the wilderness to follow some crazy preacher, without some food and wine. I mean, that's what you did. This was pre-fast food, it was pre-Circle K, and you were just plain stupid if you wandered out of town without something to eat. Now, everybody there was just selfish enough to hold back, to not want to bring out what they had because they looked around at all these other people and said, "Man, they're stupid. I bet they didn't bring anything to eat. If I bring out what I have, they're going to want to want some," right? And so nobody brought anything out until Jesus started passing everything out. Then everybody felt comfortable bringing out what they had and sharing with one another. So it is a miracle. But it's a miracle of hospitality, of changing selfish people into generous people, fearful people into sharing people, of changing grudging hearts into loving hearts. And in that way, I think it's even more of a miracle. Big deal if Jesus can multiply loaves and fishes. The real miracle is changing us, right? That takes work. And for the purposes of our vacation Bible school theme, it put a little boy at the center of all of that action. Now, if we insist on it having been a supernatural miracle, that's fine, but then I think you're really missing the point. I think you're turning it into a fairy tale, and you got the power of the story. Because the important thing is, Jesus says, you, that means us, you give them something to eat. But we say, what? Everybody? Well, we don't have enough. That's the wrong answer. What does Jesus say? Have you not been following what's going on? Haven't you been here with me? Haven't you seen what happens when people share? Don't you understand? The themes of Vacation Bible Experience this year help the kids get a glimpse of how they could respond to Jesus' call to be a part of building the kingdom. Imagine with God, build with God, grow with God, work with God, walk with God. And after every time we said one of those, everybody would say,
"Gear up."
Oh yeah, some of you are brainwashed. That's good. All right, so you're going to have, that's our stream of thought for today. So you're going to have to stand up and I'm going to show you the actions. Those of you that were with VBS, you know it. Are you ready? Here we go. This is what we would do. Imagine with God. Can you do that? Oh, good. All right. Imagine with God.
Gear up.
Next one was build with God.
Gear up.
And then the next one was grow with God.
Gear up.
The next one was work with God.
Gear up.
And the last one was
gear up.
Okay, you can have a seat. You guys are good. Sharing what little we have. for the benefit of all is the essence of what Jesus taught and the foundational idea of this feeding of the thousands. This week's Workshop of Wonders helped all of us, kids and volunteers alike, that we all have a part to play in imagining and building a new way of living together and making the world a better place, and that whatever we give, whoever we are, however ill-equipped or lacking we think we are in talent or time or treasure, it's when we give that over to something greater than ourselves that it becomes more than what any of us could ever imagine. When I was in high school, I worked at McDonald's for a summer job. I worked the grill, I worked the register, I worked the dining room, and I learned a lot. And I'll always remember the manager's mantra: if you got time to lean,
you got time to clean.
Yeah, some of you work there too. Yeah. All right. So Laura will tell you it hasn't sunk in, but another thing that I remember that drives me crazy to this day is the admonition to never, ever ask a patron, "Does that complete your order?" Right? We would get in big trouble if we said that. And why? Because that often shuts down the transaction, right? Does that complete your order?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, when ordering for five at the drive-thru, as our family does, it sometimes seems like we're interrupting something more interesting going on at the fast food place. You know? It's like we'll order three things and the person, you know, comes to the speaker, "Does that complete your order?" "No. You know, we still have some more things." You know, it's really irritating. They're like trying to get rid of us. Instead, what you always want to do is upsell. Right? So what you want to say is, and this is something that all trombone players learn when they're in music school, because they're always going to end up at McDonald's. Would you like fries with that? Right? You never end with something that isn't asking for something more. How about this? Would you like an apple pie with that? And many times, more often than not, people will go, "Well, yeah, sure." Right? Hooray! McDonald's makes more money, and I contributed to the obesity epidemic. So if we look at the same practice in broader life terms, when people manage to find themselves with a comfortable home, in a loving relationship, or a satisfying job, Jesus does not say, "Does that complete your order?" No. He upsells that. Once you got all that, he says, "Would you like world peace with that? Would you like equality with that? Would you like an end to poverty and disease with that?" Sadly, I think the vast majority of Christians don't see it that way. They see belief in Jesus as kind of fire insurance, where all they have to do is believe the right stuff, and they get a first-class ticket to heaven with Jesus as their personal concierge, right? Isn't that what we all grew up with? In the end, it's all very self-centered. And it's all about me. And I'm not convinced that that is what Jesus' ministry was all about. I think he was demonstrating and teaching people how to participate in that very Jewish idea of tikkun olam, of healing the world, which, as Jesus' life and execution demonstrates, is not always welcomed by a world that is jockeying for power and for comfort at all costs. In the end, this week's Workshop of Wonders helped kids to see that there is so much more to life than what our culture says is important. It helped them see that if they imagine with God, work with God, grow with God, that there is no time ever in life when any of us can ever answer yes to the question, "Does that complete your order?" So, imagine with God.
Gear up.
Build with God.
Here.
Grow with God.
Here.
Work with God.
Here.
Walk with God.
Here.
I think you got it. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.